World's on fire. Our culture's disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. It's time.
Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Well, good morning here on April 2nd, 2026. Show number, what is it, Spencer? 2,633. Unbelievable. I was talking to my wife. God, I love my wife. I was talking to my wife before I came down here just about how I ended up here. What is this thing I'm doing? How did I end up here? How did I do this? 2,633 shows. How'd I do it? In my life, I would have never, ever imagined this. I was going to be the center fielder for the New York Yankees, the football coach at Ohio State University. And how I ended up doing Coach Dave Live is because Psalm 37:23 says the steps of a righteous man are ordered by the Lord. And he directs your path, directs your steps. And, you know, here's the truth. So I'm speaking to somebody out there. Steps being ordered by the Lord doesn't mean straight line. You see where you want to get, but sadly, you can't just go that way. Sometimes you got to zig, zag, come back, and go another direction, and boom, boom, boom. And so to be sitting here on April 2nd, 2026, and still be kicking is pretty amazing for me, because I know me. And I know how so much of this stuff just kind of happened. Look, I'm not patting you on the back. I'm speaking to somebody right now. if it doesn't take some blood, sweat, and tears, you don't really want it. You don't really need it. You really don't. And many of you out there don't know this. I'm going to tell this story here real quickly. When I started Coach Dave Live back in... hi, John Diamond. Good to see you there, man. When I started Coach Dave Live back in 1999... I didn't have a job, and I had to pull out all my state teacher's retirement to live on. My wife substitute taught, and she had a job for a while, and then she substitute taught, and we ended up pulling all of her retirement out and living on her retirement, investing it in certain things. And I was just saying before, look, this is not about money, relax. And I began to say to her, we don't really have a monthly income. If you think I'm getting rich doing this, boy, you're missing it. Now, the blessings of the Lord are all around us for sure, but we dove out into the deep, man. When I walked away from teaching and coaching, I could still be teaching school and getting a lot of money. I'm probably worth about $75,000 a year as a special education teacher anywhere in Ohio. That's a lot of money, isn't it? Just me and Michelle. But when I launched out into the deep, I cut the ropes, man. I cut the ropes. And I want some of you to know that whatever it is, you're younger than me and you're trying to get someplace, at some point you've got to cut some ropes. The Lord's got to know you're all in. And if you're all in, then it's going to be a bumpy, bumpy ride. But stay all in. I want to show you something. This sort of pat myself on the back day, all right? Huh? I don't mean to do that, but it's just unbelievable. Pull up for me number 8, Spencer, the second part, Dave Dobenmeyer Archive. Dave Dobenmeyer Archive. And news, how many of you know I write a comment? Stay right there, man, bud. How many of you know I write a commentary every week at News? Try to every week at News with Views. I don't get paid anything for it. The first one was written, Christless Conservatism, 3/23/17. 2017. Now, I'm not real smart, but that's quite a while ago, isn't it? 2017. That would be almost a decade. Almost a decade. Now, you ready? Rachel Maddow, look at that. Rachel Maddow, fake news and the Christian eggheads. return to the old world order. Fake gospel produces fake Christians. Look at these. Now, are you ready? How about this one? Masculine men and feminine women, 2017. Scroll down. Look how many of these commentaries. I'm not bragging. Look at many of these things I've written. That's some blood, sweat, and tears, boys and girls. You have any idea how hard it is to write one? To write one? Keep going. Look at that. Every week, spitting out another one. Hang on a minute. Hang on. Stop. Made it to 2006. Wow, keep going. What was the first one I wrote? Churches are spreading mad cow disease, 5/11/04. Churches are spreading mad cow disease, January 8th, 2004. I've been doing it a while. And I'm just trying to, look, I'm not scolding anybody. I'm just trying to encourage you all out there, man. You're either all in or you're not. I could have quit a number of times. Stay right there a second, because I want to pull up something else. I want two commentaries. I'm not going to read them. Pull up number eight, Spence. Just bear with me here a second, okay? It matters to me. May 31st, 2007. Policing the law-abiding. You guys mind if I read this real quick? This is 2007. Ray, is your math any good? How long ago would this be, Ray? 2007.
9 years.
No. 17. No.
That's 10, almost 19 years.
19 years ago. I was just some guy that just walked away from teaching and coaching and started a podcast. Huh? David Arthur says that before he even got saved. So I was out riding my bicycle this past weekend, fighting my own version of the battle for the ball of the bulge. Usually I ride on my back roads in order to keep out of the way of the traffic. Plus it gives me more time to think about things of which I can write. My wife tells me that I spend way too much time with me. Bicycles, I've been told, are told to be ridden with the same flow as the traffic. Well, it doesn't make sense to me. Common sense tells me my chances of a healthy ride going up if I can see what's coming towards me. So I ride my bike facing the traffic. I like my chances of avoiding a collision if they aren't clipping me from behind. So some of these things in here, those are like quotation marks that came, didn't, whatever. But that got me flipped off by a driver last Saturday. Seemed he had the edge into the center of the road to avoid my oversized load, me on my bike. Hey, damn it, you know the law. You're on the wrong side of the road. I hope the cop gives you a ticket. This fine law-abiding citizen chastised me as he flipped his cigarette out the window at me. At least I saw the cigarette coming. Speaking of cops, my two-wheeled journey took me a few hundred yards down the road onto an overpass that crosses over Interstate 70. And there, sitting along the highway, was an Ohio State Highway patrolman with his radar gun shooting at oncoming traffic in the westbound lanes, quotation marks. Protecting and serving, I mumbled to myself. Probably part of the click it or ticket program being promoted by the safety Nazis, I'm saying to myself. Funny, isn't it? How much money the authorities make by enforcing laws that make us safer? Wouldn't his time and our money be better spent for him out looking for carjackers or rapists or illegal aliens or child molesters? And I'm curious, just where does the money go when I pay him a $100 fine for not buckling up? Shouldn't the purpose of a fine be to pay back the one that was injured? Who does an unbuckled seatbelt harm? Seems to me someone's making a lot of money forcing me to be safe. You know what they say, follow the money. Well, I have often wondered if cops get a commission on the tickets they write. And I talked to Chad, and you know they do. I didn't even know Chad when I wrote this. I heard somewhere, it could have been me talking to myself on one of my bike rides, that really aren't committing a crime if there was no victim. In fact, victimless crimes are a whole new genre of offenses that have been codified into law. Most of them are nothing more than do-good legislation sponsored by those whose palms are greased by special interest groups. This is 2007. The insurance companies want us to buckle up so they can encourage some pencil neck to write a law. Now our cops spend their time monitoring law-abiding citizens rather than chasing criminals. Write a law, create a crime, produce a criminal, and make a buck. Is America a great country or what? Somebody give me a thumbs up. Say, Coach, this is so true. This is so true, right? Huh? They make a law, so Doc Paul Gosin just wants to heal people, and they make a law that he has to follow, and if he violates it, they take his license. Most of what we call laws is nothing more than the intrusion of government into our lives of otherwise peaceful citizens. Every time I see a state trooper sitting with his radar gun blazing, I can't help but wonder what the real criminals are doing while this policeman stalks the unbuckled. While thousands of man hours are spent making sure my seatbelt is secure and my speedometer is not over the posted limit, crime is exploding all around us. I think law enforcement officials understand this game. They know that they can't keep criminals from committing crime, so they spend most of their efforts making sure law-abiding citizens are controlled. Ray, give me a thumbs up. That's our 2007. That's our justice system. Huh? They must never allow the law abiders realize that they could get away with breaking the law. Leave the career criminals alone and go get those dangerous folks who fail to buckle up. As my father-in-law likes to remind me, the purpose of the law is to keep honest people honest. That's a boom, by the way. So sadly, most of what passes as crime today really doesn't hurt anybody. Speeding is victimless. Going 100 miles on a modern freeway doesn't hurt anybody. Of course, the potential for injury is there, but in America, we don't punish potential crimes. Every time I mow my yard, there's a chance I could hurt someone with a rock flying out of it. I don't mow all just to be in trouble with the authorities for letting my grass grow too long. Throwing a rock out of a mower is not a crime, at least not yet. Hitting my neighbor with a rock, that should be a crime. In natural law, this is called malum prohibitum. This means that smoking in public is only a crime because those who write the law say it is. That is different than malum in se, which is a crime that is inherently wrong, such as rape or murder. Following that? 2007. I think America would be a better place if we worried more about crimes that actually harmed others as opposed to those with no potential to harm or crimes that only harm oneself. Crime prevention is a good thing. Making up crimes is not. By the way, you cannot commit a crime against the government. You may think I'm nitpicking, but I think we need to realize what's happening all around us. In the battle for liberty, small things cannot be ignored. Remember, it's the little foxes that spoil the vine. In a nation where everything is a crime, soon everyone will be a criminal. It's good, isn't it? Look at the Ten Commandments. Every one of them is not only a violation of the law of God, but they are a violation of the rights of another person. That's why Jesus encapsulated the Ten Commandments into two. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. A sin is something you do against another. Shouldn't a crime be measured by similar standards? How can not paying your taxes be a crime? How could that be a crime? I'll be honest with you, most of the hassles in my life don't come from keeping the laws of God. No, most of my headaches come from keeping the laws of man. The purpose of God's law is self-restraint, while man-made law is government restraint. We've traded the Ten Commandments of God for the 10,000 commandments of government. Then here's a boom. Tell the truth now. Do you really think that was a good trade? Boom. Wouldn't we be better off just teaching our kids the Ten Commandments rather than 10,000 commandments of government? I read recently in a local paper the story of a man who was arrested for driving with a suspended license. It seems that the local police, in an effort to crack down on crime, were on high alert. Tom was pulled over for having a burned-out brake light, $35. And in the course of the traffic stop, it was determined that he was guilty of failure to buckle his seatbelt, another $100. Talking on his cell phone while driving, another $100. And 45 and a 35, 75 more bucks. A quick check on the in-cruiser computer showed that his license had been revoked for failure to pay a red light charge earlier that year. It seems that a camera mounted at a busy intersection caught him pushing his luck going through a yellow light. Bullheaded Tom neglected to send in the $125 ransom to the camera committee, and so they suspended his license. So the police cuffed him, took him to jail, and impounded his car. This true story. He hired a lawyer, $1,000, who bailed him out of jail, $275, found guilty of all charges, assessed court costs of $210. The impound lot charged him $150 to get his car out. His insurance rates went up. His name appeared in the paper. His family was mortified, and he lost his job as a truck driver. Signs everywhere, signs blocking out the scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign? Remember that song? Every day when I ride my bike, I look for that fellow that flipped me off. I hope our paths cross soon. I checked with the police. There's no law stating which side of the road one must ride a bike, although they do suggest you ride with the flow of traffic. Well, there ought to be a law against it. I can hear that guy, that antagonist growls. He flips his cigarette at me. Hey, that's littering, I yell at him as he pedals towards the interstate. With some luck, maybe I can flag down a cop if he's not too busy with his radar.
Boom.
Book him, Dano. Is that it, huh? Is that where we are in America? What, 2007? Thank you for letting me brag on myself and giving me the opportunity to do it. Because, folks, this is what's going on. They are policing the law-abiding. They're not getting the real criminals. They're going after, you know what they're doing, right? They're going after people who don't pay their whatever. Just policing them. They make us afraid of the law because we know that we want to be law-abiding. The criminals, hell, they don't care. So they don't chase criminals. No, they chase the law about him. There's a message there, by the way. There's a message. I got more. I'll pause there. Come on in, Jeff.
Coach, you're saying this, and I just recently got a letter from the law director here in Mount Vernon.
That'd be a good one, I bet.
Yeah.
Law director.
Yeah, and like, who is this guy? One man. So back in 1988, in my first marriage, back when I was drinking and drugging, had a domestic violence, which was bogus. He even went back to court in 2015 and my ex-wife was going to sign a paper saying it was bogus. I wanted to expunge my records. So anyways, you'll go through all that back in 88. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm a drunk then. Like, I don't care. I did my 28 days in a dryout center and got back out, went back home to my wife and kids, and everything was hunky-dory. Now, since Clinton signed that in 94 in domestic violence, you can't own a firearm. So in 2015, I'm thinking, I'm walking out of this car lot with lots of money some nights on Columbus Road, drug alley. So I got an attorney. We went in. Judge said, hey, I'll think about it for 2 weeks and I'll let you know. Well, he denied it. So here I am 10 years later after 2015, almost 11. I submitted again and they told me to not expunge your record, but seal it. It's easier to seal your record. I got a buddy of mine that had 3 or 4 felonies in prison. He's carrying guns now, and he's bragging it up because he got his record expunged. I got a young kid here in town that's been in and jail now the last 8 months 3 times, and a couple times for strangulation on his girlfriend, trying to choke her to death. He got off the other day. They're going to give him community service. It's just, so this law director there, for 2 weeks ago, sent me a letter saying May 20th, you have a court date. They told me at City Hall when I filed this, they said, well, you don't have to show. You don't have to appear in court. Just the judge will read it and he'll make a decision. I said, no. I want to be there. I want to speak. So I'm setting it up. I'm thinking, okay, cool. I got a hearing May 20 to go in front of the judge. Just 2 days ago, the law director sends me a letter and he's once sent me the court date. He sends me another letter a few days later, says, you are dismissed. You're not getting a court hearing again. I'm like, what? Who is this guy? So I'm going to go into his office. And here I am, 40 years later after all this, been married to Mary Jane for 35 years, never beat her, never had any problems.
No redemption, brother. There's no redemption.
And they're punishing me. That's it.
By the way, let me weigh in here real quickly. I want you guys to know you're looking at an unconvicted felon. Am I the only guy that's a felon? Can you guys think of back there when you were 20, 25 years old, 18 years old, that you did something that was a felony and you got away with it? Now, I don't get away with it from the Lord. He's keeping the record. I mean, I've repented of it. That was before I got saved. Wild and crazy man, right? And, boy, they slap labels on you in this governmental system. Well, Can't have a gun? You can't have a gun because 40 years ago, you're what? I don't know how I got on this topic today.
And mine's labeled a misdemeanor.
Misdemeanor. Can't carry a gun. Can't carry. Come on in, Dave. I got so much more today.
I just wanted to jump in real quick and say maybe you could pop that link up there. I just wanted to ask everybody to give a call to the director of the Baxter Memorial Library, who is allowing a deviant man dressed as a woman in woman face to come into the library and have a children's event. And this man goes by the name of Letta Dickin. So if there's some way
that you can copy and paste that in the chat, people can grab it maybe better, that phone number.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
So you want us to just call there and say, how can you do that?
Yeah.
Type thing, right?
Yeah, just, you know,
don't get in an argument. They just
keep it nice, keep it peaceful, but just let them know that this is not there's nothing good about this, you know, because first of all, any man that promotes this and pushes it and engages in this is either a pedophile or a pedo apologist. And so that even goes for the men that are scheduling it and allowing it to happen. So we have to remember that.
Okay, so there's the information on James Rathburn. Call him and tell him that he's a wicked, wicked man. That's where I would start. Even though the church says we're not to judge, that'd be a wicked man right there, folks. That'd be a wicked man. David, I'm typing it on my computer because I'm gonna call him too. Let's get rid of that.
Thank you.
PT. All right. Heck, bear with me a second. All right, I'm gonna put Arthur. I don't know what that means. All right, I'm gonna call him too. I'll call him too. Cool. Let me see here. Anybody got their hand up? No. Can I go someplace else? Thanks, Dave. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks.
I appreciate you, man. Appreciate what you're doing. Let me pull this up here for you real quickly. This blew me away. You guys know me. What's the theme? Hey Ray, what's the theme here? What's the theme here?
Who told you that and why do you believe it?
Why do you believe him? Who told you that and why do you believe him? I got thinking about words. 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 And what words express. And the meaning of words. And slang. Slang. You ready for this? Wow. I'm taking you someplace. Stay with me. Pull up number four. Because I'm talking about who told you that and why do you believe them? Language changes in English causes example, theoretical practices, perspectives. Here's my point. Do we understand what the language might have been in the first century? And does the language in the first century, is it still the same language in 2026? We'd be fools to think that, wouldn't we? So when we look at the Bible and the Bible's on, look, I'm not criticizing the Bible again. But words in 500 BC may not be the same words we're dealing with today. Does anybody understand? Am I making sense, Ray? I always trust Ray. Said, yeah, making sense. So put this in the chat if you want to scroll down a little bit. Language changes. The changes in language. Can you think of some language? I'm going to get to it. Look at this. Major stages of English language changes. 450, Old English was 450 to 1150. That was the language they used. And there it is. Look at those words. Hurt, we, gardena, in gardium. Lo, the spear deigns in days gone by. So somebody had to interpret that language into a language we can understand. That was Old English. So scroll down. Say, Coach, this show's amazing. I know this. Then there was Middle English, 1150 to 1500. And what was that? Stay right there. Following the Norman conquest, French became the language of the ruling class. This created a bilingual society. Court, judge, attorney were mansion, perfum, and gourmet. Early model English, 1500, 1700, bite became beat. Meat became mate. Spelling remained stuck in time, which is why English language today is a mess. Modern English from 1700 to the present. This period witnessed the codification of grammar, dictionaries, Webster's dictionary, new words from the technology, pop culture, global English. Correct. Hmm? Telegraph, from telegraph to selfie, from thou to you, from yeet to ghosting. Phonological changes, lexical changes, semantic change, language changed. Got it? Language changed. What, morphological change? What? Yeah, words like thou, thee, ye, and hast have disappeared simply because verb conjugations and subject objectives distinctions. Regularized verbs, semantic. Okay, so, hey, George, you listening out there? Who wrote the King James Bible? And then interpreted it into a language that we can understand. Spencer, real quickly, Google how many Bible versions are there? Because they're interpretations, right? They're interpretations. How many interpretations? How many Bible versions? 770. There are over 770 complete, 1,700 New Testaments, and 1,400 partial Bible translations. What? Say what? Yeah. Depending on the Bible you're reading, they change the words. What did Coach Dave say? Change the words, change the world. How long ago was 1700? Wow. 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. There wasn't even a world in 1492. Certainly wasn't a typewriter or a common language or common English. Hey, friends, look. I'm not making fun of the Bible. I'm not, because we have what we have. But those people who say the King James Bible is the perfect Bible, all right. Okay, one more thing. Hang on. You don't get this, Joe Rogan. Spence, pull up for me. Number five. Slang words. The 239 most popular American slang words. And phrases that you need. Now, if we went back to when they wrote the King James Bible, would they understand these slang words? Did they have slang words back then? And we didn't understand the slang? Language corruption? So common American slangs. Okay, just scroll down now. I'm not going to take a long time. I'll put it just right there, freeze. So the slang is based. The pronunciation is based. And it means true. Bet, that's correct. Bounce, bounds, to leave a place. Cop, cap, I don't believe you. Chat, a group of people. Ditch, change the words, change the world. So much of the English language is slang. You understand? Come on, tell me you get it. The people that lived in England did not have the same language as people who lived in Scandinavia. The people in Scandinavia did not have the same language as people living in wherever. The United States wasn't even here. So what we're talking about is interpretation. Hey, not translation. They're not the same. A translation is an actual word by word by word process. That's a translation. An interpretation is what somebody thinks it says. And so a lot of the Bibles that you're dealing with and I'm dealing with are not translations. They are interpretations of what somebody thought the Bible said. Am I doing okay? You understand what's going on? Can you think just in our lifetime, common slang, what words mean? Huh? Change the words, change the world, right? I don't even understand some of the languages coming out of the ghetto, that ghetto talk. I don't even understand that language, right? But it's a different language for sure. And someday, will that become our vernacular? So what are you saying, Coach? God's law is spirit. God's Bible is spirit, folks. It ain't words. And if we don't understand the spirit and the truth behind the words, it don't matter. Because why? Change the words, change the world. That's what we see going on. Let me show you one more thing here. How about this? I bet you didn't know this, and I'm going to open it up. I got so much more stuff. Oh, we're so excited. We went to the moon again. I don't even know if we ever went before, to be honest with you. I don't know if anybody ever walked on it. It's been how long since we've been to the moon? 1978, was it? 1978. We ain't been to the moon. Now all of a sudden we're going. Now all of a sudden we're going to the moon again, huh? We're going to the moon again. Wait a minute. Where's the moon vehicle that they used before? Where is that? Anyway, pull up for me. It says they named it Artemis. This project is a Project Artemis. Really, who's Artemis? Artemis is a Greek goddess. Folks, the rocket ship that they tell us is going to the moon is named after a Greek goddess. Can you just pause there a second? Can you just pause there a second and think about that? The moon, the stars, the great beyond. We won't even talk about demons and demonology and the spirit realm, but we're going to the moon. Do you think we're going to the moon? Okay, so Artemis, which is the name of this project, is in Greek legend the goddess of wild animals, the hunt, vegetation, and of chastity and childbirth. Artemis was identified by the Romans with Diana. Artemis was the daughter of Zeus and Leto and the twin sister of Apollo. This is the name of a rocket ship. Among the rural populace, Artemis was their favorite goddess. Her character and function varied greatly from place to place, but apparently behind all forms lay the goddess of wild nature, who danced, usually accompanied by nymphs in mountains and forests and marshes. And Artemis embodied the sportsman ideal. So besides killing game, she also protected it, especially the lion. This was the Homeric significance of the title, Mistress of the Animals. Time out a minute. Who the hell determined that we would name a rocket ship after that? And of course, we don't even know what the word means, right? Scroll down a little bit, because there's a picture of Artemis. Hey, that's what we're promoting. The worship of Artemis probably flourished in the Crete or on the Greek mainland in pure pre-Hellenic times. When would pre-Hellenic times be? And we're still using those words, right? She was the virgin sister of Apollo. Huh? How do you know she was a virgin? And very different from the many-breasted Artemis of Ephesus, for example. Folks, they have brought demonic, what's the word I'm looking for? Mythology into the American culture. They sneak it in. David Arthur put in Artemis was frequently syncretized, merged with Hecate, especially in latter Greek and Roman periods. Hecate is the goddess of witchcraft, magic, crossroads, ghosts, necromancy, and the night. She was seen as a triple formed deity, often linked to Artemis as maiden, Selene as the moon, and Persephone in the underworld, and Arnassa, which is probably demonic to the core, named a rocket ship to the moon after Artemis. They didn't name it after Donald Trump. Huh? They didn't name it after Clint Eastwood. What the hell's going on? All right, I'm going to shout. I got more. Come on in, Lorian.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Okay. It's good, isn't it? David R., somebody, I need reinforcements. Is this good? Is this stuff good? I think it's pretty good stuff.
This is very good.
Come on in, Kevin. It's all around us, see? It's all around us. All around us. And we're not allowed to even mention the name of Jesus and the name of freaking rocket ship. Our government
does. We know NASA is evil because everything about NASA has been evil. But Stanley Kubrick is dead. He produced the videos and stuff for the first moon landing back in the 60s. And I got to watch them live on TV and figured out sometime afterward that they might not be real. And then, of course, a deathbed confession of Stanley Kubrick. He confessed that they weren't real, and he did those in a Hollywood basement. And we had the Red Hot Chili Peppers sing a song back in the 90s, and they knew that he produced it in a Hollywood basement. So, you know, I wonder who they're going to get to produce it this time.
Hey, let's ask ourselves this question. What kind of computers did they have in 1969? Was that 1969? What kind of computers did they have? You mean to tell me that they could launch a rocket ship? They didn't even have cell phones. They didn't even have Google. They didn't even have Stripe. They didn't have nothing. And they sent men to the moon, and the men lived on the moon, and they came back. Not once did they get off target on any of the moon launches. Hey, Spencer, see how good you are. How many, Spencer, missions to the moon did America make? How many missions to the moon? 6 times. And then all of a sudden we quit. All right, we made it. We're done. And now here we are, let's do it again. Successful landings, 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, and 17. And then 12 individuals walked on the moon. 24 different astronauts traveled to the moon, some orbiting. We had a failed landing with Apollo 13 because they ran out of oxygen. The last time was 1972. And here they come again, going back to the moon. So am I a conspiracy theorist if I question this? Why? Why are we going back to the moon? We ain't been there in how long? We got there, they said. We got there in 1973 and said, hey, we ain't going to go back no more. Nah, we're no more going to the moon. Oh, hey, let's go to the moon again. All right. Hey, let's name it Artemis. Huh? Oh, yeah, let's do that. That's good. John Diamond, come on in. Good to hear from you, John.
Hey, good to see you guys. Finally got to jump on here. Hey, everything they're doing is to bankrupt the country. Every last thing. The war in Iran, COVID, going to the moon. I mean,
get number 10 ready, Spencer. Get number 10 ready. Go, keep going.
They're just going to keep spending money until they bankrupt the country, because there's no way they can go to their central bank digital currency and put everybody on it and go to their 15-minute cities and everything else they're trying to do. It's absolutely insane. Once you understand they're trying to destroy the middle class, which is what COVID was, destroy the middle class and bankrupt the country so they can enslave everybody with digital currency. That's the only way any of this makes sense.
Dude, huh? Always follow the money, right, John? Always follow the money.
Correct.
So folks, here's Greg Greese. It's funny, this is today. I found this morning. The system being built while the world burns. We're talking about AI and all this otherworldly stuff that's going on. Why the hell are we going back to the moon? Anyway, put it at 1.5 speed. It's only about 5 minutes. Greg Greese said, they're building a system while they're burning the world down. It's 5 minutes, 20 seconds. Go ahead. Beth said they haven't gone back to the moon because they never went in the first place.
According to the Brookings Institution's analysis of carbon tax timing, high fossil fuel prices are the worst time to impose a carbon tax, but are the best time to build the underlying market architecture. And that infrastructure is rapidly being built and deployed by the biggest multinational corporations, governments and states, and the United Nations, especially in the past few months. Announced at Davos in January 2026, the carbon market platform EcoGuard automates the full carbon credit lifecycle. The carbon market is expected to reach $5 trillion by 2035. This infrastructure is designed to be invisible and ubiquitous. The goal is for every transaction, settlement, and data point to be managed behind the scenes so that the user is not aware of it. Also at Davos last January, Palantir CEO Alex Karp said that AI will destroy humanity's jobs and described a future in which high school students train for factory jobs, no one goes to college or immigrates, and black box software run by major government contractors determines whether society is being run properly. For the more compliant, the so-called 15-minute city, smart city, and freedom city models are being built to incorporate digital ID, carbon tracking, and population monitoring. Where you live, how far you travel, and what your carbon footprint is are already being tracked in multiple countries and several U.S. cities. For the non-compliant, the prison business is booming. Federal and state governments have announced over $2 billion in new prison construction in the past year alone, and the private sector dwarfs that. ICE's detention budget quadrupled when the One Big Beautiful Bill was signed into law in July 2025, adding nearly $11.25 billion to their coffers every year through 2029. An ICE director said he wanted a detention center that runs like Prime, but for human beings. And in order to keep the compliant managed and the non-compliant contained, we have Palantir, which received a no-bid contract from the USDA to track federal employees' return-to-office compliance with real-time analysis and continuous compliance monitoring. The contract also includes the One Farmer, One File initiative, which will give Palantir a unified database of the land holdings, conservation practices, insurance claims, and financial data of every farmer who interacts with the USDA. This is the same Palantir that is proudly assisting the United States and Israel in targeting operations against civilians across the Middle East. Palantir CEO Alex Karp published The Technological Republic in February 2025. It became an instant New York Times number one bestseller and has been described as the AI manifesto inspiring Keir Starmer's government by the Times of London. Karp's central argument is that the state must merge its power with big tech, as it did during the Manhattan Project, to save Western civilization. The original 1930s technocracy movement, of which Elon Musk's grandfather was a member, declared that technocracy stands ready with a plan to salvage American civilization if and when democracy can no longer cope with the inherent disruptive forces. Palantir is currently deployed by the Department of Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, the FDA, the CDC, and the NIH, and is in discussions with the IRS and the Social Security Administration. The Bank for International Settlements has been quietly publishing frameworks for CBDC interoperability that would allow all national digital currencies to communicate with each other under a unified settlement layer. Sam Altman's WorldCoin project is building a worldwide biometric identity system with the stated goal of distinguishing humans from AI agents at scale. It already operates in dozens of countries. The new system is falling together in pieces: a digital ID to fight fraud, a stablecoin for faster payments, carbon tracking for transparency, and AI for government efficiency. Our driver's license becomes our digital wallets, and our level of compliance can determine how much access we have to them. There appears to be very little pushback, and soon, it may seem to be the only option available to avoid total collapse. Greg Reese reporting.
Wow. See, this is what we have to understand. J6 was all about arresting the non-compliant. That's all it was about, folks. That's all it's about. And the State Highway Patrol, sorry, Chad, sitting out there writing speeding tickets is to make you afraid of the government. Not one arrest for child trafficking. Not one arrest. You know why? Because they don't want to arrest those guys. They want to arrest you for speeding. They want to arrest you for littering. Because if they can keep you guys compliant, if they can get you and convince you that the J6ers deserved it. What was that coach wrote? The law-abiding, what was it? Policing the law-abiding? Pull that back up there again. Policing the law abiding. That's what's been going on. The only ones who are going to speak up are what they would call the rebels, the Christian rebels. Are they, huh? Throw them in jail. Throw Bill Dunphy in jail. Can't have him doing that. He ain't following the law. And you know what else? They've convinced the rest of us that he deserves it. Go ahead, Ray. God, this is good.
Well, Dave,
we're better than Joe Rogan here. Go ahead.
Amen. I think it's about 7-8 years ago is the last time I got a ticket. I got a speeding ticket. And our good friend, the attorney there, Roger Weaver, gave me this little piece of information to bring to court for this speeding ticket, because the speeding ticket is going to affect your insurance rates. He said, just go in there and ask for an infraction against the automobile. So when I went in, and my case came up, and I was speeding like 75 and a 55. They gave me the option when I explained to them that, and he took me out of the courtroom with a black book he had, and he opened it up. The fine was $200 and something. And he says, pick your infraction on which one, bald tires, busted headlight. It don't matter.
It is one way.
You're not getting a speeding ticket, but you're going to still pay the fine. That's all we're interested. Give us the $220 and you got bald tires. You're good to go.
Yep.
That's it.
So I said, folks, come on. You with me here? You with me? Tiger Woods. You guys been following Tiger Woods? Tiger Woods flips over his car. The police show up, and they want to give him a breathalyzer. And he says, well, okay. So he blows the breathalyzer, and it comes up 0000, meaning no alcohol in the system. And they said, well, how about piss? We need you to piss, man. You're not acting right. How about taking a pee? And he says, no, I ain't taking a pee. I just blew, and there's no alcohol in there. And they said, okay, well, here you go. You're under arrest. For what? You're under arrest for DWI, under arrest for driving while intoxicated. He said, I wasn't driving while intoxicated. I blew that thing. He said, yeah, but there's something wrong with you, so we're going to arrest you. Just happened to somebody I know. Just happened, that very thing. Because he didn't blow a breathalyzer, they charged him. Said, I never drink, and I don't have to blow that damn thing. I ain't going to do it. And he didn't. They charged him with, And so what? So now he's got to get a lawyer, and whether they find him guilty or not, it's going to cost him some money for something he didn't do. Now, was Tiger on drugs? Maybe he's on drugs. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Went to jail. I don't know. I don't know. But I thought in America you were innocent until proven guilty. How are you guilty till proven innocent? They charge him with DUI without any evidence. And we think it's normal. We think it's normal. Was Tiger, is Tiger on drugs? I think he's probably on drugs. I think some type of drug, prescription drugs. I think he's probably, you know, he's probably been hurt. He had some surgeries. Maybe it hurts him to walk. Who knows the aches and pains he has? So he takes some type of medication, and maybe he took too much of it. What do you think, Dr. Paul? What would be your perspective on that, Doc?
Well, it happened to me, Coach.
It happened to you, didn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, truthfully, I was on medications, right? So if you're on prescription drugs, it doesn't matter. It could be a simple non-scheduled, which means you don't need a special DEA. They check your urine if there's anything in there. I mean, nicotine, the usual stuff, they can go after you, Coach. They can make your life miserable. They like to do that.
So, Paul, any lawyer worth his salt will say to you, do not take a breathalyzer and do not give a urine. Don't do that because you are providing evidence for them. In the court of law.
Yeah, and don't do that sobriety test either.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Why? Your Fifth Amendment right. You don't have to.
I couldn't do it now, and I'm sober as hell because I can't walk a straight line.
Right, right.
You know?
So see, folks, because you understand what's the theme we're having here today? They're police. It's the only way that they can police everybody is to make sure they crack down on the little crimes. The little crimes. What did Bill Dunphy do? Did Bill Dunphy literally break into the Capitol and go in and try to strangle somebody? No, he stood out in front and preached. Constitution says Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of a religion, no prohibiting free exercise thereof. He's out there exercising his God-given constitutional right. And they make up a law that you can't do that. Can't use a bullhorn. Whatever the law might be, they make up that. They're not called laws. They're called statutes. Statutes. Friends, it's all around us. But as David Arthur said, some tranny can come into the public library and put transgenderism in your children's face, probably paid for by the government, and you gripe and moan about it, you'll get locked up. We're all over it, man, aren't we? All over it. Come on, I got 12 minutes. Somebody, oh, wait a minute. Oh, no. Can I shift gears on you? Let me shift gears. This is powerful. It's an entirely different, I'm switching gears. All right? Bring up number one. Entirely different focus. 3,000 burial mounds were excavated in Ohio. Less than 2% of what they found was ever made public. In other words, friends, 2,000-3,000 Nephilim mounds in Ohio were excavated, and everything they found is hidden in Washington, D.C. Put it at 1.5 speed, and let's see how far we can get this. Think about it, folks. This stuff is real. This ain't made up. They've hidden all this. Go ahead.
1850 and 1900, archaeologists dug open 3,000 burial mounds in Ohio. Less than 2% of what they found was ever shown to the public. The rest was filed away. And nobody asked why. Not lost, not destroyed, not published. 3,000 mounds, hundreds of excavators, decades of field notes, and the institution controlling those records decided that 98% of what was found should remain out of public view. I want you to think about what that means, because it means that somewhere between 1850 and 1900, people were digging into the ground, finding things, documenting those things in field notes and institutional records, and then deciding that what they found should not be shared. Let me walk you through what the records actually show. and I need you to understand something before we start. Everything I'm about to tell you is documented. These are institutional records, Smithsonian correspondence, field notes, and archaeological reports sitting in plain sight that nobody bothers to connect. By the end of this video, you will understand why 3,000 burial mounds were excavated in Ohio, and why almost none of what was found inside them was ever shown to the public. And at least one thing I am about to tell you will make you question everything you were taught about who built these structures and what they left behind. The burial mounds of Ohio were not built by one civilization. They were built by at least three. The Adena culture built mounds in Ohio from approximately 800 BC to 100 AD. The Hopewell culture followed from approximately 100 BC to 500 AD. The Fort Ancient culture came after that. What these cultures left behind was not primitive. Hopewell burial mounds contained copper objects sourced from the Great Lakes region, obsidian sourced from Yellowstone, mica sourced from the Appalachian Mountains, shark teeth sourced from the Gulf of Mexico. These were not isolated communities. They were connected to a trade network that stretched across an entire continent, a trade network that was operating over 1,000 years before European contact. That is what the published record shows. What the unpublished record shows is the question nobody has fully answered. In 1846, Ephraim Squire and Edwin Davis conducted the first systematic survey of Ohio's mound systems. Their findings were published in 1848 in a document called Ancient Monuments of the Mississippi Valley. It was the first publication ever issued by the Smithsonian Institution. Squire and Davis excavated over 200 mounds. Their published report described geometric earthworks of extraordinary precision, enclosures covering 4 square miles aligned with astronomical events, burial chambers containing objects of unknown origin, skeletal remains that their report described in careful but incomplete terms. Incomplete because Squire and Davis themselves acknowledged in their correspondence that certain findings were being withheld from the published version. That correspondence survives. In a letter dated 1847, Squire wrote to a colleague that certain discoveries would require more careful handling before they could be shared publicly. The letter does not specify what those discoveries were. It was filed in the Smithsonian Archives. In 1879, the United States government created the Bureau of Ethnology under the Smithsonian Institution. Its stated purpose was the systematic study of Native American cultures. Its practical function in Ohio was the excavation and cataloging of burial mounds on an industrial scale.
Folks, they blame the Indians. And so you understand the Hopewell Indians? They're blaming all of this on the Indians. These are what? Giants. These are giants. They don't want this truth exposed about the giants. They blame the Hopewell Indians for having done all this. Go ahead.
Between 1879 and 1900, Bureau archaeologists excavated hundreds of mounds across the Ohio Valley. Their field notes and artifact catalogs were submitted to the Smithsonian. The published reports that emerged from this work represented a fraction of what was documented in the field. The gap between field documentation and published findings is not disputed. Archaeologists who have accessed the Smithsonian's internal records have noted it repeatedly. The standard explanation is resource constraints. Too many findings, too few staff, too little budget to publish everything. That explanation works until you look at what was published and what wasn't. The published reports consistently described findings that fit within the established narrative of pre-Columbian American cultures. Pottery, tools, copper ornaments, standard burial goods. The unpublished field notes describe things that are harder to categorize. Researchers who have accessed unpublished Bureau of Ethnology field notes from Ohio excavations have documented a pattern that appears across multiple sites and multiple excavators. Skeletal remains described as unusually large. Not in every mound, not in most mounds, but in enough mounds across enough sites that multiple excavators noted it independently. The field notes use careful clinical language. Remains of unusual stature. Skeletal proportions inconsistent with typical specimens. Cranial measurements outside normal parameters. None of this appeared in published reports. The Smithsonian's position on these field notes has historically been that the measurements were the result of excavator error. Untrained field workers misreading bone fragments. Wishful thinking producing inaccurate documentation. That explanation works until you consider that the same pattern appeared in the notes of trained archaeologists. In multiple sites. Across multiple decades. Filed independently by people who never met each other. I don't know what was in those mounds. I genuinely don't know. But I know the field notes exist. I know the gap between field documentation and published findings exists. I know that the Smithsonian Institution holds 17,000 Native American skeletal remains in storage that have never been returned to descendant communities. And I know that the same institution holding those remains was also the institution deciding what to publish from 3,000 excavations in Ohio. Here is the detail that I cannot stop thinking about. Between 1850 and 1890, regional newspapers across Ohio regularly reported on mound excavations. These were not fringe publications. They were local papers of record, covering discoveries the way they would cover any significant local event. Those newspaper accounts describe findings that do not appear in any Smithsonian publication. The Chillicothe Gazette, the Scioto Gazette, the Cincinnati Commercial, multiple Ohio newspapers in multiple decades describing excavation findings that the institutional record does not contain. The standard explanation is journalistic exaggeration, reporters sensationalizing discoveries to sell papers. But the accounts are specific. They include names of excavators, locations of mounds, descriptions of artifacts in language that matches the clinical terminology in unpublished field notes, journalists who never read those field notes, describing findings in the same language as archaeologists who never read those newspapers. In 1990, Congress passed the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. The law required institutions holding Native American remains and cultural objects to return them to descendant communities. The inventories that followed revealed for the first time the full scale of what had been collected from Ohio's mound systems during the excavation period. The gap between what was collected and what was published was larger than most researchers had estimated. I don't know what decisions were made in those Smithsonian offices between 1850 and 1900. I genuinely don't know. But I know that 3,000 mounds were opened. I know that field notes were filed. I know that less than 2% of the findings were published. And I know that the people whose ancestors built those mounds are still waiting for answers that the institution holding the records has never fully provided. And I know that the official explanation has always been the same. Resource constraints. Excavator error. Journalistic exaggeration. The mounds are still there. The field notes are still there. The gap is still there. And nobody is asking why. If you are the kind of person who asks why...
Wow, remember that. Who told you that and why should you believe them? Quickly, Randy. Sorry to run so late here.
Coach, you remember what we did in St. Louis, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know, we ended at the awakening giant. Their prophecy of the giants reawakening and taking back this nation,
this economic
agenda. We stopped it, Coach. So all we need to know here, Coach, is who they were here. These familiar spirits are still here. We're coexisting with them and we're being inspired by criminal thinking. So, Coach, you're only as dumb as you want to remain. So, Coach, we took authority. We're teaching people how to do that. And that tells me that we own the future. They do not.
So, Randy, a real, real important question for everybody out there. Folks, why must they hide these things? Why must they hide these things? Very simple. It proves the Bible true and evolution false. That's their religion. Evolution is, wait a minute, godless evolution is their religion. And they have to do everything they can to suppress the truth and the evidence that shows otherwise. That's what's going on. Why? Can you imagine the money they'd make if they would open up and let people come by and see these giants? Imagine charge $50 a head to come look at those giants. They'd pay off the national debt, wouldn't it? No. Because why? Because the kings of this earth have set themselves and the rulers are taking counsel together against the Lord, against his anointed. Oh, yeah, they're real. Giants are real. They're around here. They're real. And not a church within 50 miles of here talks about it. Boom. I got a minute. Somebody fill me up here. I didn't even get started with where I was going today. I'm telling you, I didn't even get started. We're living in a time of universal deceit. Change the words, change the world. Policing the law abiding. All that stuff that I wrote about back there, it is right in front of us, and we're seeing it happen. And it's the seed of the serpent against the seed of the woman. And the seed of the woman won't fight because, why? They've been told us it's the end of days. It's what the Bible says is going to happen. And Coach, it just, you know, doggone it. Well, the Bible says that men's hearts are failing them for fear for things coming upon the earth. AI, you don't think that's going to scare some people? How are they going to pay you when they get a robot to do your job? How are you going to earn a living? Yes, Massa. Yes, Massa. They'll be controlling every aspect of your life. Because remember this, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. And where the Spirit of the Lord ain't, there's bondage. That's the battle. That's what we're up against. Don't let them lie to you. See you tomorrow.